widely appreciated by Iran's leader, officials, and the nation as a whole. Yet the families say the only reward they seek is the honor of martyrdom for the greater good, for national sovereignty, and for territorial integrity for Iran.
The sacrifices were great and the burden of loss as heavy as can be, but the mourning families maintain that they're proud of their martyrs and are ready to make even greater sacrifices, because to them the protection of their country and its values is far more important than anything or anyone they could ever give. Maryam Azashir, Tehran.
Iran and Russia are holding a joint maritime rescue and relief exercises in the Caspian Sea aimed at boosting naval coordination with neighboring countries. Our correspondent, Gisu Misha Ahmed, has spoken with Drill's spokesperson, Rear Admiral Mohsen Razoghi, at the event's venue.
With the entrance and the arrival of the vessels, we have seen the beginning of the CASAREX 2025 with the slogan, "All of us for the secure Caspian Sea." All the vessels have arrived in the premises of the drills, the naval force of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and the drills with the attendance of the vessels from the Islamic Republic of Iran's Navy and from the Russian Federation and some participants from neighboring countries in the Caspian Sea. And the Islamic Republic of Iran and the naval force of Russia and the naval force of the Islamic Republic is determined to have security and to maintain security, whether in the Caspian Sea and the Persian Gulf and the Oman Sea, with the participation of regional countries and their cooperation and partnership and the sympathy of these countries.
Iran has successfully conducted a test launch of a suborbital satellite carrier named the Qasid as part of a developing space program. Tests aimed at assessing emerging technologies currently under development in Iran's space industry. Results are expected to enhance performance of domestic satellites and related systems. The Qasid carrier has been developed by the IRGC Aerospace and designed for faster and more accurate deployments. It was first inaugurated back in 2020 when Iran's newer satellite was put into orbit. Rising death toll, ruined homes, and shattered lives. These or Palestinians are enduring in Gaza, where dozens of people have been killed in fresh Israeli attacks since dawn today. Among the new victims, 13 Palestinians who lost their lives in an Israeli artillery attack on tents housing displaced families in Al-Shati refugee camp in Gaza City. Two children also died due to severe malnutrition and lack of essential nutrients. According to Palestinian Red Crescent, nearly 120 wounded Palestinians have been treated now at Al-Quds Hospital in Gaza City since the early hours of this morning. This U.S.-Israeli campaign of genocide, which began in October of 2023, has now killed more than 59,000 Palestinians and left well over 142,000 wounded. And to get a better assessment of the atrocities by the occupation against Palestinians in Gaza throughout the day today, we're going to swing over to our Gaza correspondent in Dirabalah, Moti Abu Musab. Moti, good afternoon, pal. Good to check in with you and seeing that you're doing well. What can you share with us?
Yes, actually, I'm really baffled where to begin from, because every single part of Gaza Strip is still witnessing more cruel attacks of the Israeli occupation forces, claiming more lives of the Palestinian civilians, particularly the Palestinian women and children. And let me begin with the major attack that took place in a Shatter refugee camp after the Israeli occupation forces targeted a cluster of the makeshift tents of the displaced people there, killing at least 14 Palestinian civilians, many of them were women and children. The dead bodies were found completely charred and as well, or should it be in recognition, because they were targeted indiscriminately by the Israeli artillery. This is another horrific massacre unfolded in that area, and it is added to the ongoing and ceaseless Israeli massacres that are committed day and night against the Palestinian people. Meanwhile, two other Palestinian dead bodies were extracted from the rubble of the destroyed houses in Jabalia refugee camp. And here in the central area of Gaza, as you know, the current situation is still disastrous, and it is precarious, particularly in Deir al-Balah city, amid the ongoing military offensive which targets the southern outskirts of Deir al-Balah city. We are talking about ceaseless and uninterrupted Israeli brutal air strikes and attacks, in addition to the artillery strikes, which are still ongoing and abated, targeting those areas. Those attacks are still ongoing for more than 48 hours without any cessation. At least 25 Palestinian residential buildings were completely destroyed and pummeled by the Israeli warplanes. In addition to that, as you know, the Israeli bolts of fire are still repetitive, targeting the area. Hundreds of thousands of the Palestinian people were forcibly expelled out of those, as you know, shelters that they were taken inside that area. So the current situation is absolutely horrific, and it is very cruel for the Palestinian people in Deir al-Balah city. And till this moment, we are able to hear those deafening bombardments resulted in from the chronic and extensive artillery shelling maintained against that area. Let me remind you that Deir al-Balah city was claimed since the start of this genocidal onslaught till this moment as a safe zone for the Palestinian people. They have demanded, I mean the Israeli occupation forces have demanded the Palestinian people to go to Deir al-Balah city, claiming that it is a safe place. And now they are attacking Deir al-Balah city directly. We are talking about roughly 40% of the entire area of Deir al-Balah city was demanded to be fully evacuated from the Palestinian people. But unfortunately, the people don't have any place to go to amid these prevalent and ubiquitous attacks are still covering everywhere in Gaza Strip. And what is really horrific and excruciating for the Palestinian people is that they are no longer able to move from a place to another place. They are absolutely exhausted, and they are frail from starvation, from dehydration, from the catastrophic humanitarian conditions. They don't have anything to eat. They don't have the transportations. They don't have anything to help them just to endure this, as you know, this unbearable pressure maintained by the Israeli occupation forces. And even when it comes to the southern parts of Gaza Strip, the Israeli attacks against Al-Mawasa area were continued over the last night. Another attack took place there, claiming the lives of three Palestinian civilians after they were targeted by the Israeli occupation forces. While when it comes to the aid seekers, they were also targeted by the Israeli occupation forces. At least eight Palestinian aid seekers were killed and slaughtered after they were targeted point blank by the Israeli mass shooting and the gunfire near those notorious and abhorrent aid distribution centers in the western side of Rafah city. So once again, the Israeli occupation forces are still escalating their brutal air strikes and attacks. The mass killing of the Palestinian people is still underway and abated, while the starvation hits the Palestinian people everywhere in Gaza Strip. According to the last update we are talking of the Gaza Health Ministry, we are talking about roughly 21 Palestinian civilians died of hunger and famine in less than 24 hours. The last two babies died today as a result of that malnutrition. One of them was four months old baby. So the current situation is apocalyptic for the Palestinian people. Meanwhile, as you know, the Al-Shifa Medical Complex announced that the dialysis department is out of service now because of the lack of the fuel those hospitals need to operate and function amid these unbearable and unendurable conditions that the Israeli occupation forces are still inflicting upon the Palestinian people in all areas of Gaza Strip.
All right. Well, thank you for that comprehensive update, Moti, and stay safe there, pal. Moti Abu Musaba joining us from central Gaza. Meanwhile, the United Nations has expressed a deep concern over the breakdown of humanitarian conditions in Gaza, condemning Israel's targeting of starving Palestinians seeking aid in the besieged strip.
The Secretary General is appalled by the accelerating breakdown of humanitarian conditions in Gaza, where the last lifelines keeping people alive are collapsing. He deplores the growing reports of children and adults suffering from malnutrition. The Secretary General strongly condemns the ongoing violence, including the shooting, the killing, and the injuring of people attempting to get food for their families. Civilians must be protected, civilians must be respected, and they must never, ever be targeted.
Dujarric said that civilians must be protected and respected, and added that Israel must allow and facilitate humanitarian relief provided by the UN and other humanitarian organizations. He said that Israel's evacuation order in parts of Deir al-Balah has restricted the UN's ability to deliver life-saving aid. And on Monday, the World Health Organization said the Israeli military attacked its staff, residence, and main warehouse in Deir al-Balah. The UN Health Agency warned the evacuation order in the city has affected several WHO premises, compromising agencies' ability to operate there in Gaza. Two more Israeli soldiers have been killed in Gaza, marking yet another setback for regime's military and ongoing confrontations with Palestinian resistance. According to Israeli media, 19-year-old Staff Sergeant Amit Cohen from the Golani Brigade's 13th Battalion was killed in Khan Yunis in southern Gaza. Another incident, an occupation force reservist was killed in Gaza fighting. According to Israeli media, his killing took place after a blast caused a building to collapse. New fatalities come as Palestinian resistance continues to put up fierce resistance against occupying forces, inflicting heavy losses on them. Regime's authorities often conceal the true scale of troop losses in Gaza amid growing criticism of this ongoing campaign of genocide. Estimates suggest around 900 Israeli soldiers have been killed in Gaza since October of 2023. Yemeni armed forces have carried out yet another retaliatory operation against Israel, targeting Ben Gurion Airport with a hypersonic missile.
In support of the oppressed Palestinian people and the resistance fighters, and in response to the crime of genocide perpetrated by the Zionist enemy against our people in the Gaza Strip, the missile force of the Yemeni armed forces carried out a qualitative military operation targeting Ben Gurion Airport in the occupied Yaffa region using a Palestine 2 hypersonic ballistic missile.
Saudi said the operation successfully achieved its goal and halted the airport's operation, adding missile strike force Israeli residents to also have to flee to local shelters there. A spokesman also praised the Yemeni people for supporting oppressed Palestinians amid the Gaza genocide. Saudi underlined Yemen's anti-Israel operations will continue as long as the genocide in Gaza persists and Israel keeps up its blockade on the territory. Latest retaliatory operation was launched following a drone strike by the Israeli military on Yemen's port city of Hodeidah. And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of RIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Amin Rastani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. That last inspiration that we want to take, inshallah, from the day of Ashura, I felt would be good to be that of death itself, and that everything is going to end, brothers and sisters. I want to share with you some hadiths, inshallah, as much as I can today, as many hadiths as I can that speak of this the importance of this death. Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam says, "Dhikr al-maut yumitu al-shahawat fi al-nafs." This is why it's important. Remembrance of death, he says, takes the life of, destroys, kills, the shahawat that we have in us, those carnal desires that we have in us. You see, if I'm going to be here forever, then I have an inclination towards here. And the desires I may have are desires that I will try my best to satisfy in any way possible, if it's halal or haram. Yeah? The only way these pleasures will slowly lose meaning and color to me is how? Is if I remember that they're going to end. The only thing that reminds me that they're going to end is death. So the Imam, he says, يُمِيتُ الشَّهَوَاتِ فِي النَّفْسِ. And that's why we have a famous hadith by the Holy Prophet that he refers to as death as هَادِمُ اللَّذَّاتِ. Hadim comes from, destroyer. Destroyer of pleasures, it's called death. وَيَقْطَعُ مَنَابِتَ الْغَفْلَةِ. Says, remembrance of death destroys the roots of heedlessness and forgetfulness. If you were to think about anything else, talk about anything else, go anywhere else, it wouldn't have the power of killing the shahawat in you like death does. Now, of course, when it says shahawat here, those haram pleasures that we seek. If it's halal, Allah's allowed it, it's not a bad thing. يُرِقُّ الطَّابْعَ يَكْسُرْ or يَرُقُّ الطَّابْعَ وَيَكْسِرُ أَعْلَامَ الْهَوَى. It softens one's nature. يَرِقُّ probably comes from رَقِيق and رِقَّة, which means when something's soft, it softens one's nature. Like you cool down a little bit. All this pushing and obsession towards dunya, yeah, you kind of loosen up when it comes to that. It's a relaxer. Or whatever those pills are that you take that relaxes your body. يُطْفِئُ نَارَ الْحِرْسِ. It extinguishes the fire of obsession. وَيُحَقِّرَ الدُّنْيَا. And it belittles the dunya. Younger people, younger guys, sisters, right? We don't expect this. Islam doesn't expect this from you right away. You don't need to go home now and say, oh, okay, you know, let me destroy all pleasures in life in my eyes. No, right? And even if I wasn't going to say this, I don't think you would have done that anyway. So just remember this. Let these things echo in your mind. And please, as the years pass, as you grow, mature with the passing of these years. Don't let this secular environment we're in. And by the way, when I say secular environment, I don't mean America. Secularism has taken over everything. Muslim lands are secularized to an extent. Doesn't matter where you are anymore. It's all a little village. Okay? All these values and stuff that the West has, used to have, now it's the values of everywhere, unfortunately. You know what it's like? This example came to my mind. It's like when you love somebody, right? And you're after them, and maybe she likes me, maybe he likes me, maybe he doesn't. Oh, look what he said in this WhatsApp message in the group. Maybe he cares, maybe he doesn't, maybe he's... All of a sudden you find out that that person you were so into is into somebody else. What happens? Once you find out that they themselves, their heart is somewhere else, that's enough to kind of destroy that love you might have had. Unless you're super obsessed, but even then, you're disappointed and you're upset. Guys, the dunya is not in love with us. Just letting us know. The dunya is not in love with us. It doesn't care about us. All we do is we accumulate, and we leave it for those to come after us, and we go. I'm like, dunya, I did so much for you. Now the time has come for me to benefit. It's time to go. You can't take any benefit in what you had. Right? And so when it comes to accumulation of wealth, unless I am trying to accumulate a lot so that I can support others, support the community, other than that, I don't see a reason to kill myself for that. Anything we go into, going too far with it. I'll use this example. The bodybuilders... Bodybuilding, being in shape, okay, fine. But bodybuilding as if that is the goal in life, where I just put as much flesh as I can on me. Why? So it becomes the food of the insects and animals in the ground later? I don't want to feed, that's not my job to feed those things. Anything, if we take it too much, it has to make sense, brothers and sisters. It has to make sense in the equation in which Akhirah also lies. If you take Akhirah out of the equation, a lot of things are going to make sense. All right? A lot of things are going to make sense. All the isms out there are going to make sense. But if we bring Akhirah into the picture, a lot of things go out of the window. I'm sorry. They just don't make sense anymore. That I'm going to kill myself. Unless that's my way of life, that's my livelihood, it's a different story. But some people, you find that they have passion in certain things only to serve others in the end. So that's what I'm trying to say. Either you're going to be feeding the insects, you're going to be leaving wealth for five generations down. You're not responsible for five generations down of your descendants. We're not. We actually have literature for these things. And so, if you're younger, brothers and sisters, keep this in mind. It's like the dunya just doesn't care about us, and then we care so much about it. And so we'll do everything for it. Baba, understand, this guy, the dunya, his heart is somewhere else. His heart's not with us. The second or the sixth imam, he says, إِذَا أَنْتَ حَمَلْتَ جَنَازَةً فَكُنْ كَأَنَّكَ أَنْتَ الْمَحْمُولِ. Remembrance of death and the importance of it and the reasons for it. He says, whenever you are carrying a janazah, what you should do is, you should imagine that that is you being carried. What are you going to do? And then come back to reality and say, okay, alhamdulillah, that's not me. So what am I going to do for that day? Put yourself in that person's shoes that's being carried.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Adi Alimun Hali Hakimun Mati.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Antonio Gramsci, the Italian Marxist philosopher who coined the term cultural hegemony, believes self-power is the main cause of hegemony. He believes only those governments can impose their hegemony that exercise persuasive power as well as direct force. With the end of the Cold War, the United States used its military, political, economic, and media capacity to carry out different operations in countries caught up in civil war. And with its political and economic reforms, it tried to build its desired society in target countries and empower forces dependent on itself in those countries. This way, it could complete its power puzzle over the world. American imperialism has always been hand-in-hand with American exceptionalism. Ever since the idea of the Destiny Manifesto gained influence in the 19th century, the United States extended its own presence and influence not only from beach to beach in North America, but also across all nations of the world. Perhaps what's most evident about America in power games is that it is a novice with imperial equations. In the 19th century, when European powers, especially England and France, were building their vast external empires, the United States was still busy with committing genocide against Native Americans and with its civil wars. In the 1890s, when the United States had stretched across from beach to beach, the next step was to go beyond its borders and occupy other parts of the world. Another concept connected to a tradition of American exceptionalism is finding a spiritual goal for war. This approach means to conceal inhumane American acts in time of war with these other nations. As Harry Stout, the American missionary, has said, America's belief is in war as a religious tool and a holy commitment all over the world. Some thinkers believe Westernization of the world is a continuation of its Christianization, and that this trend continues in a different, reconstructed form. Globalization of the West has roots in pre-Renaissance Christianity. The nature of Western Christianity post-Renaissance has itself undergone change in the process of becoming worldly and global. But globalization is actually one and the same as historic Western religious and cultural and civilizational expansionism on the rise. Actually, distorted Christianity in the West now directly serves to spread Western civilization and thought. The method of comparing religious belief and the new Western culture is also very interesting.
But we're burning something and we're actually convinced of it. Yeah. And according to the Bible, it's actually true what we're saying.
The behavioral pattern of Western culture has been reconstructed based on moral tolerance advocated by distorted Christianity. And to other nations, this moral tolerance is a sign of progress in Western civilization and piety. In other words, via globalization, it is possible to become both Christian and hedonistic, and also progressive and civilized in choosing a Western interpretation of life, humankind, society, nature, and history. As a matter of fact, to the young generation of the world, the allure of globalization is this very characteristic of Western civilization. Of course, there's much to be said also from the other side of the story. Religious elements have never easily faced accepting the infiltration of Western culture.
General MacArthur's charge.
After World War I and understanding the importance of expanding international relations, international organizations were established to monitor human rights observance. This slowly weakened the national sovereignty of countries. Some thinkers believe a traditional religious outlook saw itself confronted by the international community's social, cultural, and political currents. This caused the Salafi school of thought to enter into an unprecedented war with Western civilization in the early 21st century. An occurrence clearly evident in the attack on the New York Trade Center Twin Towers. This incident signifies the conflict between religious understanding and globalization. Of course, there are other interpretations of the incident also, which say all relevant currents, such as the Twin Tower explosions, were pre-planned by Westerners. Despite all these interpretations, some believe the 21st century will see the world turn to religion. Many people are adopting Christianity, Islam, and Buddhism. However, taking to Islam has a totally different reason. People are becoming Muslim because they are critical of the conditions and situation of Western civilization and the globalization trend.
I describe what seems to me to be a central feature of the post-Cold War world as far as international politics is.
Samuel Huntington, a political science expert, has a theory called the Clash of Civilizations. He had predicted that after the Cold War, the source of all conflict would be religious culture and identity.
Who are we? The challenges to America's national identity.
He had predicted the tug of war between the Western world and Muslim world. The truth of the matter is, one of the greatest impediments to Western civilization infiltrating Middle Eastern societies is Islam. As an example, we can study Lebanon. Although European and American missionaries had set up plenty of schools and media in Lebanon, the Lebanese resistance movement took form with a completely Islamic identity in the 1980s in the atmosphere of security and identity conflict. William Raff, an American Foreign Service officer and political theoretician, believes the positive view Arabs had of America was damaged for several reasons. Raff believes the first reason is the issue of Palestine. Arabs are angry with America for its all-round support of the regime occupying Al-Quds.
Christian Zionism, at its simplest, is Christian support for Zionism. But we need to unpack that. Today, Zionism is essentially a secular movement driven by Jewish people who believe that they have a right to historic Palestine, and we see in the present policies of the Israeli government quite a racist, supremacist approach to claiming the land, colonizing the land, driving Palestinians off their historic homeland, instituting laws that preference Jewish people over non-Jews, and so on. Christian Zionism is primarily a religious movement with political implications.
Another reason is that Western powers have insulted the character of the Prophet of Islam on different occasions, offending Muslim pride. Yet another reason is that on the 9th anniversary of the 9/11 act of terror, a radical pastor called Terry Jones announced he meant to hold a ceremony to set the Quran on fire.
We are going to have an international Burn a Quran Day.
Every non-Muslim is an infidel. Their lands, their women, their children are our spoils.
And finally, the making of the film Innocence of Muslims in 2012 incensed Muslims to a point that American embassies were attacked in several Muslim countries. All these measures have weakened U.S. soft power among Muslims. Of course, in addition to points made by Raff, there have been other instances of insult to the Prophet of Islam and Muslims. For example, the film Fitna, meaning Cause of Division, made in 2008 by a Dutch politician, which provoked a global backlash. Also, a trend started of drawing caricatures of the Prophet of Islam, the first of which was by the Danish newspaper Jyllands-Posten. All such acts hurt Muslim pride globally.
At the beginning of the 19th century, you find Christian leaders advocating for the return of the Jewish people to Palestine because they believe this is what their scriptures mandated. So Christian Zionism preceded Jewish Zionism by at least 50 years. And then in terms of its presence today, we have to say that 9 out of 10 Zionists today are Christians. So although we associate Zionism with Jews and with Israel, the irony is that 9 out of 10 Zionists today are Christians. And so although as a minority, it's a secular political philosophy or movement, the reality is that the great majority of Zionists today are religious and they are Christian. They're driven by the belief that somehow the contemporary Israel is the fulfillment of promises God made in the Bible to his chosen people.
An instance of U.S. meddling in other countries' internal affairs came to be seen in color revolutions, a post-communist occurrence. A color revolution is an anti-violence revolution for regime change. After the Cold War, color revolutions were rolled out in Eastern Bloc countries to totally eliminate the two great barriers before U.S. hegemony, China and Russia.
He's one of the richest men in the world. He's given away a staggering $32 billion. But is the billionaire philanthropist George Soros at the heart of a global conspiracy?
When you look at the entirety of what the foundations have done, it's been very worthwhile and very effective. Yet if you look at individual programs, many have failed. We have had many difficulties. In Russia, we have had about three putches where the foundation had to be cleaned up. Mm-hmm. So it's been one long struggle with lots of difficulties. But when you look at the results, very rewarding.
An institute obviously involved in guiding color revolutions is the Open Society Institute, OSI, owned by an American Jewish capitalist called George Soros. This foundation evaluates dissidents to the central government in countries of interest to provide the grounds for peaceful revolution by providing financial support to anti-government student movements.
Trying to improve the world is more difficult than making money. You can only measure it if you have a strategy. I set up a foundation to promote this idea of an open society. Opening up closed societies, making open societies function better, and foster a critical mode of thinking.
For example, with the Rose Revolution in Georgia or Orange Revolution of Ukraine, anti-central government groups succeeded in creating structural change with support from this foundation. Of course, the U.S. government's footprints can be traced anywhere popular protest has been guided against the legitimate government. For example, in the Middle East, where the Syrian civil war is the most recent and bitterest example. The American strategy till before 2011 was after a way to topple Assad. When Islamic Awakening sprouted in early 2011, the Obama administration grabbed it as a chance to oust Assad. When Assad proved his steadfastness, Obama ordered the CIA to align with Saudi and Turkish efforts for toppling the regime by supporting anti-regime local fighters, including mercenaries supported by Saudi Arabia. But the quick ousting of Assad, which American strategies dreamt of, turned into a full-scale local war which only set fire to the Syrian people's lives. For the moment, America's general diplomacy policy in the Middle East is basically in line with reducing negative impacts of its military meddling. This is why a theoretician such as Joseph Nye stresses time and again that to infiltrate other nations, America must take a path of imposing soft power, so that other wrong tactical calculations that damage U.S. credibility with Middle Eastern nations and governments do not occur. Joseph Nye compares the distribution of power in the world to a three-dimensional chessboard, at the head of which is military power and the world's only power, the United States. The next rung of power is economic. Power at this level is multipolar, balancing between America, Europe, China, and Japan. But on the third row of the chessboard is external relations, meaning occurrences beyond the control of governments. Instances such as global warming, pandemics, and drug smuggling. At this stage, the only practical solution is cooperation between nations and governments. And there is no other solution. Nye believes the zero-power summary game is no longer any use. What is of use is the positive power summary, meaning there are no more winners and losers in the world.
People like Joseph Nye and others, to some extent, speculate upon what this post-Cold War era will look like in terms of the international sphere. So what you see is an understanding, or an analysis at least, that we're moving to a much more flexible, a much more dynamic consideration of power, i.e. in the Cold War period we have essentially two blocks, capitalist and communist. We've also got a non-aligned movement, but we have these two kind of hegemonic blocks competing with each other, and the two, well, let's just say that it's quite a simple scenario where good conduct, for example, is only a small part of the requirement here. So states that we might hold up as being more moral actors, you know, states that are not, for example, dictatorships, or states that don't suppress their people in different ways, they almost have more of a, are perhaps received better in the international community, at least on whichever side they align to. However, as we move into the post-Cold War period, there's an understanding that, as I say, the definition or the consideration of power, and particularly what matters or what counts when it comes to power, is a bit more flexible. So soft power is I guess, as I say, this an identification that things are changing.
9, 8, 7. It's noon in Los Angeles, 3 o'clock in Washington, and 4 big stories are developing right now.
In today's political equations, what's most important is superiority of narrative. Even a 30-second commercial film advertising shampoo or toothpaste will bear no effect if it's not successful in its narrative. For a text to be effective, its narrative must be seemingly correct and simple. Joseph Nye points to the importance of narrative given what the time calls for. In our times, anyone winning the war of narratives is the final winner. Now, these American narratives, spun by a few non-governmental organizations, try to paint the United States in a positive, holy, humane, and peaceful light.
To officially recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel.
The move comes with consequences, and American embassies around the world are already bracing for trouble.
Talk about the emergency response now. You see there Isabel Coleman. She is the deputy administrator at USAID. Isabel, I know this is a very busy time for you and your organization, so thank you for joining us. We understand some aid from the States is on the ground in Turkey and in Syria. Tell us about what's already there and about the commitment you're making for what's ahead.
Yes, thank you. I mean, it really is just an unbelievable situation.
we were able to get two of our search and rescue teams on the ground in Turkey yesterday.
It is the nature of cultural change in societies to be gradual and slow. So to fully observe the cultural effects of a phenomenon, one must be patient.
If our culture is unattractive to others, then a given cultural artifact doesn't produce soft power. It may produce the opposite. It may produce revulsion. So if you take an American TV program or American film in which women are shown running around in bikinis and divorcing their husbands and working, and you show that in Saudi Arabia, that's not attractive to the religious conservatives who rule those countries. But there is an interesting dimension to that. If you ask, is Baywatch attractive to run Iran? Clearly not. Doesn't create any soft power. But if you ask, what do young Iranian teenagers want? They want to see an American video in the privacy of their homes. So you can attract some people and repulse or repel others at the same time.
Perhaps more time is needed to study the effects of America's cultural measures on Middle Eastern belief, behavior, and lifestyle. A foundation such as USAID, in addition to its economic activities, exacts plenty of focus, expense, and energy on cultural activity in target countries. Change made in the lifestyles of these people is evident enough, but perhaps it has not yet reached its climax. Even so, if we monitor the activities of these supposedly cultural organizations, such as USAID, USIP, and NED, we can pinpoint and predict key cultural changes to come with high accuracy.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 11,740 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM, 91.5 megahertz for Iran. You can also listen to the English channel of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. You can also listen to the radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our radio quality and other means.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
The following is the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with government officials and the ambassadors of Muslim countries. The meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniyah on March 31, 2025. Today, events around the world are taking place in rapid succession at a staggering pace, whether in our region or in other parts of the world. This rapid pace at which events are taking place necessitates that all those who see themselves as being either influential or affected by these global events keep up with these events quickly and carefully and state their position. Today, Islamic governments have this duty. Islamic governments should think carefully about their own nations, their friends, their enemies, and the events that lie ahead and await them. The Islamic world is quite large. We Muslims have a large population. We are situated in a critical geographical location in the world. And in terms of the world's natural wealth, we rank among the wealthiest countries and communities in the world. If the Islamic world wants to take advantage of these critical situations, it needs to take a fundamental action, unity, the unity of the Islamic world. Unity doesn't mean that governments should merge together into a single entity. It doesn't imply that they must think alike in all political orientations. The unity of the Islamic world involves, first and foremost, recognizing common interests. In the first step, they need to know what their common interests are. We shouldn't define our interests in a way that would lead to discord, conflict and strife among ourselves. The Islamic world is one family. It's one whole. Islamic governments must think about this and move in this direction. The Islamic Republic has extended its hand toward all Islamic governments and considers itself to be their brother. As the president just stated, it considers itself to be with them in one general fundamental front. Let's work together and put our minds together. Let's maintain unity in the Islamic world. If we do this, the aggressive, oppressive, coercive powers won't be able to attack the Islamic world, impose their will, or blackmail them. Unfortunately, extortion and blackmail have become the common practices of the powers today. Major powers blackmail weaker countries, governments, and nations, and they state this openly. Let's not allow the Islamic world to be blackmailed by the US and the likes of them. We must defend the rights of the oppressed. Today, part of the Islamic world is severely wounded. Palestine is wounded. Lebanon is wounded.
Allah, I wanna thank you. That you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB
English Radio.
Welcome to all our listeners from around the world. I hope you will accompany us into the early hours of this morning, and this is our schedule. We'll start tonight's lineup with today's special daily mixed format program that deals with various Islamic and Iranian occasions. They will be followed by Hadith of the Day. The program presents a hadith from the Holy Prophet and members of his household, the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them, along with a brief explanation and commentary on the hadith. And to round up this hour's program, we have our radio productions feature. Stay with us for this hour.
Through the same is the light of guidance and the shift of salvation.
IRIB English Radio in the month of Muharram presents today's special. Every day for 15 minutes.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, Salamun Alaikum, and welcome to a new episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. I invite you to be with us. Today we're going to speak about the guiding light.
Are full of grief for our beloved, it bleeds. We cannot bear this life unfree. They killed him mercilessly. They killed the living Tawheed. A 3-year-old girl was in the arms of her dear uncle. She caused the deserts to flow with endless tears of Abulfath, the endless tears of Abulfath.
On Tuesday, 26th of Muharram, 1447 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 31st of Tir, 1404 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 22nd of July, 2025 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. So at first, let's open Allah's book. From the Holy Quran, today, verses 15 to 20 of chapter Al-Fajr.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Fa'ammal insanu idha mabtalahu rabbuhu fa'akramahu wa na'amahu fa'yakulu rabbi akraman.
And as for man, when his Lord tries him and thus is generous to him and favors him, he says, "My Lord has honored me." But when he tries him and restricts his provision, he says, "My Lord has humiliated me."
بل لا تكرمون اليتيم.
No, but you do not honor the orphan.
ولا تحاضون على طعام المسكين.
And you do not encourage one another to feed the poor.
وتأكلون التراث أكلا لما.
And you consume inheritance, devouring it altogether. And you love wealth with immense love.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
These verses warn that neither the blessing is the reason for the proximity to Allah, nor is adversity and the lack of blessings the evidence of being far from Him. They are but diverse factors by which Allah, according to His wisdom, examines people. It is the human being who sometimes becomes proud and sometimes hopeless because of his limited capacity to understand and endure.
I learned from Hussein how to be wrong.